Straight to the business.
Hello, algorithm viewers. It's Iiro here again in the same room in Copenhagen. Subscribe the channel. Please do that. You will get a new episode every second Saturday, and I'll be very happy if you subscribe and leave a comment. I like to read those. In this episode, you will hear the lovely singing, beautiful Danish English accent, and also the Finnish English accent, which sounds more like somebody had a stroke. I can't help that. Welcome to Algorithmi Podcast, Cecilie Norby.
Yeah, you pronounced it right.
Yeah.
Not many people do.
Yeah. Well, you must have seen all the versions, and
I have.
Yeah. Okay. Can you remember the funniest in the written form?
Also, it doesn't have to be. You know, it can be in Danish. You know.
Yeah.
Also from the tax office.
Yeah.
They write something really, really funny.
Okay.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's because it's spelled with a Danish letter. The A. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an A and an E put together. You
yes.
know. And it's
yeah.
it's not in as far as I know. That Danish is the only language who has this letter.
That's right.
You know?
And you have other letters like that.
So it's a lot of trouble.
A lot of trouble, yeah. In almost every hotel I still go, I'm Liro. So So
yeah,
the first
which
is kind of worrying that adult people, they don't really know how to write correct. So they just take the first I and it's they correct it into L.
Yeah.
Liro.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's because it's so uncommon with two I's.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
So we got to live with that.
We got to live with that. And but we have more important things to discuss. And your first selection is the Ravel Piano Concerto in G. And
yes.
the second movement, the beautiful second movement in E major. The interesting thing is that I have many jazz musicians in this series, and most likely they decide that their first choice is classical music. But the classical music comes first to us, you know, as European musicians.
And maybe it's because we're it was presented for us in the childhood.
Yeah.
And that's
my
case
well.
I've known this piece by Maurice Ravel since I was, you know, like 3-4 years old.
It's so beautiful.
And it was so, it just captured me from the very first time I heard it.
Yeah.
Which I can't remember when it was, but it was just like, it was romantic and it had this little twist to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was not only romantic and using all the romantic scales, it was something different, you know?
Yeah.
And that already from that time on, I just think that was the most beautiful, because it's not perfect. There's notes in there which makes you raise your eyebrows.
But
in a very romantic and beautiful way.
And particularly the second movement.
And of course it depends on how it's going to be played, you know, but at the right tempo but it's so. It's so perfect. The length of it, the build up, the themes, also the instruments,
the little woodwind solos that come over the after the opening melody. It's so beautiful. I was listening it again last night, and I noticed now with the sheet music I was listening it. So Marta Algerich, your favorite, she's very free. She's very free in her interpretation. She has the left hand eighth notes like that, but then she plays the melody like almost like a free jazz player.
Yeah, it's so breathing.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah.
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 So I think she must have had some knowledge in France how to do, how the composer wants. I don't think if she met Ravel, but I think hearing that, I kind of realized that, oh, this is the way to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Also because it's a, you know, the architecture of that piece of music is so fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I would love to hear that live, actually.
yeah. By her.
By her, definitely.
Okay, well, hurry up.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, she's not getting younger, but she's playing all the time, concerts.
Yeah.
Have you played this opening? Have you? I know you play piano.
No.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, it's okay.
And for some reason, I think if you get down to every note of it, I'm not very technical, you know. I use my ears more than know what's going on. And probably after half a year practicing every day, I would maybe be able to play it, you know. But maybe I don't want to. Maybe I just want to leave it as a, you know, really space out dream.
That's right, and if
foremost listen.
Yeah, yeah, just, and if it's relaxing and mesmerizing music for you, maybe it's better to keep it away, that you're not thinking it with your fingers.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would rather sit like this, you know, that I would sit and practice.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
listen
yeah,
to it.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. Ravel's melodies are funny because they are not catchy in the way that they're kind of more like, well, he was impressionistic. They're more like paintings, the melodies, except Bolero. But Ravel didn't like that composition.
No, but it became himself. A huge hit,
that's
of
right.
course, because it was more like, I think, I don't know, but it was more like an experiment, you know?
Yeah.
That you repeat a theme at certain times, you know,
right.
and it drove people crazy.
That's right.
You know, at the opening, first time it was played, people was just like furious, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
At that time, almost everything drove people crazy. The same thing with The Rite of Spring by Stravinsky. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the French people, not the easiest crowd.
No,
yeah.
But sometimes you could wish that music would drive people crazy.
Yeah.
More like, you know, more like passion. It meant maybe
that's
more.
Right.
It was maybe a more of an intention, intense experience at that time. You know,
that
more
is right.
of an event.
Yeah,
you know, something that you looked forward to.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You reflected on after you've. Been there, you
that's
know?
Right.
Yeah.
And Petrushka, Rite of Spring, Bolero, that was really new.
Yeah.
But nowadays, if you are an artist and you announce that I'm going to do something which is new, I mean, you'll make you most likely make a cloud of yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
Clown.
Yeah.
Yeah. But. One can always try.
Yeah.
It's good.
You could try to say it.
Yeah,
and
you
see
can say,
the reaction.
Next Tuesday, Montmartre Jazz Loop. I'm going to do.
Yeah,
it's new.
Yeah.
It's completely.
It's never heard it.
100% new.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be so funny. Is this area of classical music, the French Impressionism, Debussy, Ravel, is this something you listen often? Is it an important era?
It's a very important era. And it must be like 10 or 15 years ago, I did this album on ACT music called Arabesque, which was actually melodies I've heard in my childhood, which I really, really wanted to be a part of.
Yeah.
So with great respect for the music, I wrote some lyrics to certain pieces.
Yeah.
And I recorded that with Lars Danielsson, my husband.
Yeah.
Guy who's living in this
That's
house
right.
as
yeah.
well.
Hanging out here.
Hanging out and making coffee.
Yeah.
And Bugge Wesseltoft, the Norwegian piano player. And Ulf Akenius and a couple of other great musicians. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to pick tunes And I'm not going to think about what area they're coming from or what composers. It just have to be some connection with my childhood and some classical music, which I'm very fond of.
Yes.
And then when I should make the notes on the cover, I had to figure out, okay, when was all these pieces composed?
Yeah.
And I realized that I think it was 9 out of 10 was composed in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
In between 1890 and
1930s,
something like that.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I mean, like, it was just in 10 or 12 years.
Okay,
you know.
Okay.
So I was really, I should have been there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Around
the, the millennium, not this one, but the
yeah.
What the they say Belle Époque. That was Belle Époque before the wars.
Yeah,
yeah. Where
it was.
Yeah, that would be an interesting time to go back to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I have played one of because when I have been on stage with you, I can't remember which tune. It was Clair de Lune or what?
I did Clair de Lune, but I think it was The Dead Princess.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yes, it's from that album. Must be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Then we move on to Nancy Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And your clip, which I will, by the way, include with this episode, also the Ravel link and the sheet music, which can be found on this little bit shady Canadian sheet music library for free.
Yeah.
You know this, Petrucci Music Library?
No.
All the composers that have been dead 70 years, their sheet music can be downloaded.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's legal by the Canadian copyright. Right laws.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's good for checking out stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Sibelius will be in that category, I think, next year.
Okay.
Because he died in the 50s.
Great.
Anyway, Nancy Wilson.
Yeah.
Nancy Wilson, the song is You, which is a fantastic standard.
Mm-hmm.
And and then the clip that you sent me, that was from I Spy TV series, and I saw the young Bill Cosby there.
I thought it was him.
It's him. When things were good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
But Nancy Wilson was really good. She was
incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, that's also actually from my childhood, because my mother... She was an opera singer at the Royal Theatre for many years, and my father was a classical composer. So all they have in their record collection at that time was symphonies and operas and, you know, great dramatic classical music. And then they had this one album, and I haven't even asked my mom how it got there in the first place. But she looked very different, and she was very beautiful, and her voice was, you know, opposite my very dramatic mother's colleagues.
Yeah,
she was kind of husky in her voice, and a little hoarse, and sexy, and, you know, more calm.
Yeah.
And it really talked to me.
Yeah.
So before I could even, you know, pronounce her name or, you know...
Oh, that early. Yeah.
I was just like, I like to hear the lady in the red dress, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she was a little bit in the shadow of Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and those
she
names.
She was, and she was actually also, when she had her she had many, not maybe hits as the one you just mentioned, but she was very, very popular.
Yeah.
But right on the edge where she was about to go really viral, as we say.
Yeah, nowadays.
You know, the music genre changes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, Elvis came along. He was great already at that time, but Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, you know, in the 60s.
That's right, so, the late 60s.
So,
yeah.
It was much more popular, but there's no doubt about she was a star. You could really compare to Beyoncé.
She
had the incredible talents, you know, timing, looks. She had everything.
Yeah.
But she was just maybe on the wrong time to just go through the roof.
Yeah. Maybe 10 years before she would have. But and also the way she sings the text, it's really good.
Yeah, she's that's what she says about herself.
Yeah.
She's foremost a text, you know, lady. The text comes first.
Yeah.
But she's not into all these. She's not into scat singing. She's not into phrasing. You know, doing all this. She's just to timing.
Timing. Yeah. Well, I think you got that from her, because I can hear the text very well when you sing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And that's getting more and more rare nowadays.
Yeah, maybe it does.
Yeah.
It compares to what genre and actually also who you're playing with.
That's right. Yeah.
Because to find musicians who really back the lyrics up, not only the singer, but the lyrics, you know. Because some tunes, not all tunes.
Yeah.
But some tunes should really be, you know, where the lyrics comes first.
Okay.
You know.
So is that something you work on the rehearsals? You think about the text with the musicians?
And yeah, I would never here's a piece of paper, read the lyrics before you even play on it.
Yeah.
I never do that.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's totally ridiculous, you know.
Does somebody do that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
The autumn leaves. Oh, this is about nature.
Yeah, you have to go for a trip to feel the autumn leaves before you can play it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No, I never do that. But I have been in a rehearsal where I have to stop the band and say, "You gotta listen to the lyrics." You know, you gotta, you know, and it's difficult sometimes because people can mistake it for "You gotta listen to me." But it's not. It's not that. But you have to. And I have tried to play also with musicians who. The autumn leaves, driven by the wind, where you have a piano concerto.
That's right.
In between every line.
The pianist and pianist and their slippery fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to show off.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah. No, you're not one of them. You're the ones who.
Long course. Yeah.
Well, but everything has its time, and you know there is tune also with vocals, who has to have a very busy playing from other musicians.
Right. Yeah.
And actually, when I was a teenager, people always ask me when I was a kid. You know, would you like to be a singer as your mom?
Yeah.
And my answer was always no, definitely not, you know, because I wanted to do something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But and in my teenage years, I listened only to instrumental music, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which can be very helpful for a jazz singer.
Yeah.
You know, and it is. Listen to solos and...
And
vice versa. Yeah, of course.
So I listened to a lot of Weather Report, Chicoria, Mahavishnu, Herbie Hancock, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was first in my late teens, I think I was... 18 or something, I was introduced to Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder, all the great, great vocalists.
I
had no idea. I remember a girlfriend of mine, which I sang together with, Nina Forsberg, which is an incredible singer.
Yeah.
She came and showed me a record with Aretha Franklin. And I said, "Oh, is it you?" You know, you said, "Thank you for the compliment, but it's not." You should know her, you know.
Yeah.
So I was very late in that. So, you know, I like to also stand back and let the band play.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
Because I love that. And I think I would love to be an instrumentalist but I was too lazy.
Yeah, okay.
It was too easy to change key a singer. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But I think you did your share in the vocal experiments and rehearsing your vocals, because you're very versatile. I have heard so many different voices from you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard your dark alto singing and just the pop voice and the versatile jazz voice, and then I've heard some really convincing soprano, like a classical soprano, mm-hmm. from you. So I mean, are these areas you worked separately, or is it just natural for you, all these?
Maybe it's because I've been in so many different contexts and in music, and I really love all these kinds of music. I've never really asked myself if I, you know, I was asked when I was young very much, do you think it's wise to go in so many directions?
Yeah.
Especially because I was playing in a very popular pop band here in Denmark.
1-2.
Yeah, 1-2.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was playing in a very fantastic fusion band called Frontline.
Mm-hmm.
And they both went very successful at the same time. Within 1.5 years, both of the bands released 2 albums each. Yeah. And the pop guys, they actually tried to buy the fusion band.
Of course, yeah.
And they, he talked with me about it in such a subtle way that he didn't want me to see that was what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've already been in the business that long time, so I just thought of, okay, if we're giving him this, he'll just put it on the shelf.
Yeah.
And then we go 100% with 1-2. You know,
okay.
You don't want any other cars on the freeway.
That's right.
You know, but you know, I'm very happy that I was stubborn on that point. You know, because and on the other hand, the fusion band didn't understand how I could play in a band with so few chords.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
But it was probably for the money.
Yeah,
they said.
But it
wasn't. It was for the energy and the big one hit. You know, and the big the energy from big concerts and big crowds.
Yeah.
And the you know, distorted guitars.
The power
in that area. You know.
Yeah.
And
I think people said that you're the Danish ABBA, 1-2.
Yeah.
At that time. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Was your life different then? I mean, when you go out, did you get stopped by people? Were you like?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I still do. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We still do. Yeah, yeah.
They still remember.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
of
fantastic.
Course.
Okay.
Yeah. And we still they played it, still.
Yeah.
Very very much.
Okay.
You know.
Has there been a reunion since the early? Okay.
So we went out for a reunion tour in 2007, and we should have played one concert only.
Yeah.
And it was in a large hall over here, and we didn't make any commercial for it at all.
Yeah.
So by hearsay, it was 4 sold-out concerts, and then we did 90 concerts, you know.
90?
Yeah, during 1 year.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
all
it
right.
was, so we reached that point where we asked ourselves, okay, do we want to continue playing old tunes?
Yeah.
Or do we want to do new material?
Yes.
And we just decided that was it. That was a golden area. We want to continue, you know, with our regular music lives, you know, because in the long run, it's not the music that is closest to my heart, you know, really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to visit, you know.
Yeah.
It's also to see
how much people love the tunes and
know the reaction afterwards is also, you know, you just brought us back to my youth, and you brought us back. I don't want to bring anybody back. I want them to be present, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So with all respect, because I love the music. Yeah. I love the music, and I love to sing together with Nina and Søren Benson, my ex-boyfriend, did all the tunes, and he did a great, great job. You know? But it's a little... you know, sometimes I love to visit it, you know? But it's like it is,
And those venues with that group, they don't work with the music you do with Lars. Would you do a big hall with the duet with Lars or your quartet? Do you think it would work?
We have done the some of the same venues with my last album, which called Athenia, which is like seven people on stage, and where I mixed the whole thing finally, you know. And it's some more, you know, rock, soul, pop music combined with maybe some fake engine intro, you know, and some African rhythm suddenly, and some straight jazz ballads, and where I do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank the audience to be patient afterwards.
Okay, and you play the big halls with this. Okay, let me ask you about the concerto for two sopranos that was many years ago, 1990, with your father as a composer, your mother as the other soprano.
Yeah.
How did that work? I mean, I'm just thinking about the relationship with my parents, and you know, with all the possible complications there can be, and to have your father as a composer and your mother as kind of a companion. Did it go without trouble or
no? Did you expect that?
No, I didn't expect that. Yeah, but you survived.
Yeah. That was an experience.
Yeah.
Really an experience. And I mean, my father, he was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because he had done his work, and it was so many changing, matrices, what you call it, up and down. And I said, please don't make it too difficult, because I'm not really, really good at polyrhythmic,
Yeah,
I can do some, but not all the time, changing all the time.
Okay, yeah.
And then I think in that 30 minutes, the whole concert lasted. I think there was 6 or 8 bars continuously with the same metre.
Okay.
You know? So I used my ears, and it was a 12-tone compositions.
Of course.
And my mother is very good at that, because she was presented to all these 12-tone operas in the 70s.
Okay.
So she's really, what do you call it, a hog reading notes, out of context, So, and he was pretty cool, because I said, Dad, I can't sing that. That's too high. I mean, I can't sing that. And my mother was just like, you sing whatever is put in front of you.
Because
said, no, I'm not. I'm used to change things. And my father was pretty cool. He said, yeah, just sing something else.
And but what was too high for you? Like above A or
C? No, I can't remember. I think it was, more the way I wanted to sing it.
Okay.
I wanted to sing it in full.
Yeah.
And he had written two high notes for me or something,
Okay.
And it was really complicated. And I brought some of the musicians from Frontline.
Yeah.
Which was a fusion band.
Yeah.
Just to make it, to melt the genre together.
Okay. Oh, they were playing along.
They were playing along.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And the piano player from there, he apologized to my parents. He said, "Yeah, I've tried to learn Cecilia to sing these strange scales,
Yeah.
But it seems like it's very difficult for her to learn that." And my mother, father, they have never been ambitious on my behalf. Never, ever.
Okay.
So they were just like, whatever, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was, yeah, it was an experience.
Yeah. Was it recorded?
It was recorded, I think. Not, it didn't came out on some kind of album. It was a radio broadcast.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know where it is.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a great experience.
Yeah. That's quite unusual, I must say. But something you probably remember the rest of your life.
Of course.
Yeah. Then I have a question about the classical singers, their sense of swing and sense of groove. I mean, what is your opinion? Because I've heard many great classical singers, but then they sing Brazil or Autumn Leaves or something very simple, and the rhythmical things are very difficult for them. I don't know why. They kind of, it's embarrassing to hear some big name in the, but maybe they can't be laid back. Or something like that.
I think it's an experience, you know, whether you have been in that music.
Yeah.
Whether you what your experience are with this music.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
If you know, I remember I was invited to play on a Brazilian album. By the way. Look at that cat over there.
Yes,
it almost looked like
a Brazilian cat.
A panda?
Yeah,
you see that?
That's right.
That's so beautiful.
I should
yeah.
Now
it's gone.
It's gone. Okay,
yeah. But it's so beautiful.
Tell me if it comes back and then I turn the camera.
No, I was invited to sing on a Brazilian album.
Yeah.
And that's one genre that I haven't listened a lot to. I haven't been visiting that.
Yeah.
And was full of respect for it. And they were just like, relax. I just lean back and imagine the sun. You know, that was... So I felt that I was a little off, you know, rhythmically and intonation-wise.
Yeah.
So... Maybe it's lack of experience with that genre. Mm,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I didn't mean that you are rhythmically off.
But I imagine because sometimes I remember coming home to my mother, you know, like I was kind of 19 years old and have experienced the fantastic talent of Chaka Khan. You know, which was, you know, building the high F, you know, and I was just like, Mom, how's she doing this? Because I got free vocal lessons from my mother.
Yeah.
We can't offer you any money, but you can have as many vocal lessons as you like.
Yeah.
And I was just, how is she hitting this note? You know, and she was singing the high F for me in the classical way.
Okay.
And I was just like, you know how you can get irritated on your mom? Mm. It's a special feeling, you know? It was just like, no, it's not like that, you know? It's different, you know? But yeah, but she hadn't listened to any rhythmic music at all. So how could she know?
Yeah. But with her knowledge, could she kind of... crack the code how Chaka Khan was hitting the
not really because
it's
they
are
not using their chest voice at all.
That's right,
you know. Yeah. some altos go like na 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 and then they turn, but a soprano would never do that.
That's right,
know?
You do the change.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then you have a long way up to doing it all the way up to F, you know.
Yeah. One more question from the past. Your composition Nat Hinde, church organ with percussion, trumpet, and bass. That sounds very exciting. Is this recorded?
It was recorded, yeah.
Okay.
Live. Yeah.
Okay, but it's not an album.
No.
And you were not singing on that at all.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But church organ, percussion, trumpet, and bass, and singing. Okay. atonal? Okay.
Some of it, yeah.
Some of it? All yeah. right.
Do I would love to play it for you.
I would love to hear yeah. it. I would love to hear it. Well, was this one off, or do you do?
No, we did. I think we did four concerts with it.
Okay.
And it started actually. It started. I was playing around with Sibelius, you know, the music program.
Yeah.
And then I actually made a concert for church organ.
Yeah.
Alone. And I guess it was some after my father died. It was a couple of years after that.
Okay.
So a organ concert came up like whoop.
Yeah, okay.
Whoop.
Yeah.
This, you know, I didn't know where it came from.
Yeah.
And then I had this wonderful organ player played it in the dome in Copenhagen here.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible experience to hear that.
Yeah.
Except from I had a cold, so I wasn't able to hear.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
But then I made it out for.
Yeah.
I write it out for choir and strings and horns.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
That was great experience.
Yeah, maybe it was in the memory of your father.
It was
unconsciously. Yeah.
There was some elements.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you planning to do this kind of pieces in the future?
I have some classical pieces.
Okay.
I've done.
All right.
Which I'm very fond of, but I kept it close to my heart.
Okay.
So I don't know if I wanted to, you know.
Present it. Okay.
But
all right.
Maybe in the future, I don't know.
Okay. I encourage you to do.
Yes.
Then I have some topics from you that you feed it to me, and we'll go through these. This is really interesting. The first one, you feel you learn to know people better through their music than through an hour of verbal conversation. But it's so true. I mean, one example for me is the Polish pianist, you also know, Leszek.
Yeah, Leszek.
And I have done, I think, two albums with him and few tours. I can't say I know him at all.
No.
We never talk, even on a train or in a car. Not very talkative guy.
No.
And I feel that I don't want to disturb him. But when he starts to play, I know him.
Yeah.
I know him, and I know we have listened to the same albums, and we just, it's incredible.
He's a very, very good example, actually.
Yeah.
I've done an album and several tours with him as well. And he's not a talkative guy.
That's right.
And he has this long hair. And he had at that time.
Yeah.
Long hair. You know, he's very, you know, what do you call it? Intimate. He's very, you know, for
introvert.
Himself.
Yeah.
Introvert.
Yeah.
For himself. And the moment you're on stage and he put his hands on the piano, he does like this, and then he look up, and he's so much. So present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A real stage lion.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I think he's not wearing shoes and stuff like that. Yeah. He's got this. Yeah, but it's incredible. Even, I mean, we know English. Leszek Mocher knows English, but you can actually have a one-hour concert with somebody without a verbal common language.
Yeah.
And that's particularly true in jazz. If you do blues and jazz standards, it's quite astonishing.
Yeah.
So that brings us.
I remember one time at I think it was some kind of Christmas show. I think you did.
Yeah.
Where several artists singing one Christmas song.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest pop stars here, which is working in a whole different ways, you know, with songwriting probably, and you singing the same thing every time. And he has a great voice. He's so talented, you know. And then we came to, over some gin and tonic, we came to talk about this.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, let me show you something. You know, because he started to ask about jazz, and he didn't have a clue at all.
So
he said, I'm gonna get the piano player, you know, from the band we just played with, and then I just say two sentences to him,
yeah,
and then we're going to play you a tune. And I knew that the fantastic piano player Paul Reimann,
yeah,
he plays a lot of jazz, so he knows,
yeah,
you know. So we find a piano, you,
yeah,
know,
yeah,
and he was just like, you know, and I was just like, okay, Paul, we do Autumn Leaves.
Yeah,
it was okay, actually,
yeah,
Autumn Leaves,
yeah, yeah,
in a very high tempo,
yeah,
and then we're gonna go. We do a breakdown, and we do outro. We made a whole, you know, schedule for this.
Yeah.
We did one, two, three, four, and then we just did this. And this pop guy, he was just like, "What the fuck? Didn't you rehearse a week for this?"
Yeah.
No.
No.
It was just made up, you know.
That's
so,
right.
So
yeah.
That's, because you in jazz mostly, you know, we have different terms, certain terms that everybody knows, and
that's right,
and a certain repertoire,
yeah,
that everybody,
yeah,
should know,
yeah,
in all keys,
in all keys,
in all,
yeah,
genres,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and that's so much fun to
it
go
is
out and jam,
yeah,
if you come to a different country and come to New York and you go out and,
that's right,
and jam in nighttime,
yeah,
you know, with guys and girls you don't know.
That's right.
That's a gift.
Yeah, it is a gift.
Yeah.
And it only happens in jazz, actually. It,
yeah,
will astonish,
yeah,
the pop people and the classical people,
yeah,
that how can you do it?
Yeah.
I was looking for your recording history, and you really had some American names on your Blue Note years on,
mm-hmm,
your albums.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still in touch with these, or how does it go now? That, I mean, you have Randy Brecker and all,
yeah,
these.
Yeah, Randy Brecker was on my last album. And,
oh, okay,
and actually, talking about improvisation, I remember that I went on a tour with him once, and he really pushed me. He was the guy who said, go ahead and improvise, you know. So how can I improvise when you're standing there? But he was so... He was so great, nice.
Okay.
And he said, go ahead. Yeah, great. You know,
okay,
because he could feel that I was on the edge,
yeah,
daring these things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
so you did more scat singing,
yeah,
after that?
And
or?
Kind of learned that in my own way, because I haven't studied it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
I can't do it properly. As a properly, you know, but I try to do it in my own way and,
yeah,
using,
yeah,
my,
yeah,
ears, you know, and yeah.
I think you are doing it in a great way, you know.
Thank you.
And the studying part is not, it's never been that, the formal studies has never been,
no,
that important factor in jazz.
Yeah.
I mean, you either you get it or you don't. And
yeah,
I think,
you but
know,
you know, maybe that's, you know, when you are, you know, having a whole life as a musician, that in the beginning of your career or the beginning of your music life, you are so concerned about not sounding like all your idols and your all the ones you've listened to. If I can't hit the,
yeah,
F like Chaka Khan, or I can't scat like Ella, or I can,
mm,
then don't do it. And I've been way too curious to don't do it.
Yeah,
I could hear that I would never sound like them, you know. So
yeah,
all your mistakes,
mm,
all your flaws,
yeah,
you know, make the musicians you are today.
That's right.
That's what I feel.
Yeah.
And I had a great conversation. I happened to meet Bobby McFerrin.
Yeah.
In such a strange way, because he was playing with Lars, my husband, and
yeah,
I was just the only one to the sound check. And I was trying to hide, you know,
yeah,
it was in the concert house of Stockholm.
Yeah.
And it was just like, he spotted me down there. And he said, who are you? What are you? I was like, I'm a singer, you know. What kind of music do you sing? And then I find myself in a conversation with him.
Okay.
And I say, okay, I try to sing some fake opera and fake scat. I said, don't call it fake. He
said, yeah.
And looked at me very serious. And he said, that's your flaws and your mistakes, and that's your voice from within, you know.
Okay.
And that's what he does. He does all these kind of instruments and.
That's,
you know,
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he was dead serious about not
don't
calling
call
it fake.
Okay. Don't call it fake. That was, you know, to.
But did you actually sing for him, or you were,
yeah,
just, yeah, yeah?
Because he had one tune where he. He's
yeah,
he's making people come up to him, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he said, why don't you raise your hand when I ask if somebody want to sing with me?
Okay. Yeah.
So I sung one tune with him. Yeah.
On stage.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
That was great.
That would be a very risky question in Finland, for Bobby McFerrin or you, you know, if you would come there and ask, is there anyone who wants that?
Yeah.
Everybody would sit on their hands.
Or
they would rather leave than, because they're shy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very shy. Okay.
Yeah, I've been on stage with... either Bobby McFerrin and also one time with Diane Reeves.
Yeah.
That was not my idea or hers idea. That was the great Rainer Hamann, which was the musical director.
Jazz Baltica.
Jazz Baltica at that time. And he took some younger people at that time, being me, and put them together with one of their idols, you know?
That's right.
Ulf Vakenius with Pat Metheny and Lisbeth Diaz with Ayrton Morea. So I was in panic, you know, before the concert because I know her so well
and
I look up to her so much. So I just remember laying in the bathtub just before the concert.
Yeah.
What on earth can I sing, you know, to make my space
there,
you know?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, okay, a Swedish folk song, probably she can't do that like I can. So we started, Lars and I, he was on the concert, and then there was two other guitar players which was working with her, so we were five on stage. And we started out with this Swedish folk song, and I have a picture taken, a photograph, where her two guitar players and her is sitting like this. Like, what on earth are they doing? You know,
jazz på svenska.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we did some Joni Mitchell. We did some Love for Sale, and we didn't have a huge repertoire, of course, because it was a very short rehearsal time.
Yeah.
And then after the concert was over and it was direct recorded for television and the audience was very happy.
Yeah.
Then we got to do an encore. And normally in a jazz club, wherever in the world, we'd say, okay, what are we going to do? A blues and G.
Hmm.
Everybody decide on blues and G.
Yeah,
fine. Everybody can do that. And then I went on stage and realized I can't remember the words to any blues because I'm so if I can't remember the words, I just sing some shit English. Of course.
Yeah.
And here I was on stage with Dan Reeves singing a blues in G.
But there are no lyrics to blues. They're mostly instrumental. Oh, well, Straight No Chaser, Blue Monk, Billy's Bounce, there are lyrics. But I couldn't
think of anything.
And
then she started like real cool, you know. Ah, those rocks in my bed, sounding so cool, you know. And it was my turn, you know, I realized. And then beep, bop, 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 beep, bop, bop, bop. It came closer.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I just panicked, and then I just thought to myself, okay, what's a real blues? It's talking about how you feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Improvised.
Yeah.
So I just happened to sing, you know, how can you have the blues when you got a voice like that?
Yeah.
You know? And then the audience laughs, and then it turned out to be the audience and I singing to her.
Yeah.
How can you have the blues, you know?
Yeah.
And then it turned out to the greatest conversation about, it turned out to be a song about also traveling and shopping in Copenhagen.
Wow.
And where did you buy those boots? And, you know, a real blues. About everything.
And real improvisation. Yeah.
But I was just like, I was in panic.
Panic brings the best out of us, usually.
Sometimes.
Relationship with the audience. Again, I complimenti for you. I was just in Italy. In Italy, everybody says complimenti after the concert.
It's so fun.
Complimenti. But I mean, you're very good at that. It looks like you want to have a relationship with the audience. You want to connect with them, but it's not like that with all jazz artists. I have seen many jazz bubble, inside the bubble artists. And I think a better connection with the audience would bring more friends to jazz.
Probably, yes. Yeah. You are very good at that also. Not that it should be like...
But you are. I do my little jokes, and they enjoy that, and they are not improvised. I think about the jokes and the stories a lot, and I can improvise on piano, but not verbally so much.
No.
But I think ahead that what I'm going to say, and not to make it too long, because they came to hear the music, but you probably learned that in your pop years already, how to entertain people and make them happy. And
I think I did. Some of it.
To audience, crowd work, as they say.
Crowd
working.
I've never heard that word.
Crowd working.
So,
but that's something you encourage younger jazz artists to kind of look at, how your relationship to audience is.
Yeah, sometimes also when I sing this many different genres during one concert.
Yeah,
it's very important for me also to, you know, like in my body language to show how I want them to receive the music.
Yeah,
you know, so I can be on the edge of the stage, you know, singing some acoustic things with the microphone, just to be out there, and then I normally open my arms just to show my vulnerability, it helps myself, you know, to dare to do things, you know, just to not to hold back. Because then you strain your voice, you know.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if I've had a very outgoing, up-tempo party, including June going on.
Yeah.
Followed by a ballad, where I want people to listen to the, for example, piano intro.
Mm.
Then I stand out of the light.
Yeah.
And just hold my hands, you know, down on the side and look down properly. And a little to the side. You know? Just to, so you're very conscious about where the spotlight is.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and step aside if there's somebody who has a solo.
Yeah. And listen. Yeah.
And listen.
It's not easy. I mean, particularly in jazz, you have to listen, you have to know everything that is going on stage, but then there is always the danger of, are you playing for yourself or to the audience? You have to have the both channels open same time. Mm. It takes time. It takes time, you know.
And then when you, if something happens in the music and you are deadly sure that this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Then I don't give a shit about how it gets to the audience.
Yeah.
Because then it's more important for me that we have this happening, and we have our moment.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And they'll get it.
They'll get it. Yeah. Not. If they're not getting it, it's not. My responsibility. You know?
That's right. Yeah.
But I love that moment because I for some reason we played in Odense.
Yeah.
Which. A couple of hours from here.
Yeah.
And then I had this moment, you know, where I felt that the musical environment for me was perfect. You know, I just had this moment.
Yeah.
Because we had a long outro where we just some 6-8 just freaked out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then I actually apologized just for fun for the audience to say, okay. We took your time. We freaked out. We played. Hope you liked it.
Yeah.
And then we went to a ballad.
Yeah.
And those musicians, they just played this ballad so simple without any extra stuff, just play the melody, support the melody, support the lyrics. And actually, I had a moment of tearing up.
Yeah.
Because that was what I really been searching for, you know, musicians who can follow me in my whole palette, you know, of music.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know, I was really touched.
Yeah.
That's music, in my opinion, musical understanding on a very high level. You know? Everything
that's
to...
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you have your
time.
Senses. Yeah. Was the 6/8? Was it Holy Earth?
No, it was. Papa was Rolling Stone.
Okay.
Did we play that?
We did play that. Yeah. And there is a jam in the end.
Yeah, there is a jam.
And the ballad, was it Life in Mars or?
No, it was actually a new ballad, which I don't know if you've heard. Same Old Smile.
No,
from my new album.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
Then you had some thoughts of the life of a jazz musician on tour, which is not always easy.
No.
What is the most difficult part for you nowadays? I know you have issues with flying. You see, sometimes you don't like to fly.
No. But it has been a little better, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it random? Is it like weather things that?
Yeah, it's in periods.
Okay.
It comes and goes.
Yeah.
I would say, but I have been so afraid of flying that I've been you know taking the train wherever I can take the train home from Zurich. Frankfurt.
Yeah.
I'll take the train home.
My wife takes the train from Finland.
That's a whole nother level.
That's a whole nother level. Yeah. Well, the ferry first, of course, but
Wow.
Yeah, she has the same issue and it's not it's not getting better. Okay, so that's one thing and then it's quite tough, you know, traveling every day. Many people don't maybe know this, but we as jazz performers, we do a concert every evening. We don't stay like a conductor stays for the whole week or the soloist of the orchestra. We perform every night and we travel the day. It's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And you know, also food issues, you know, you don't get... proper food. You get a lot of white bread.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you feel like, I do.
Yeah, especially in Germany.
And maybe you don't get as much water you need to and as much sleep as you need to.
Yeah.
Because some you're going to get an early flight or, you know, you can't sleep after the gig.
That's right.
And maybe in the break you're kind of tired of traveling, so you drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
ruins the sleep. Yeah. Have you limited your touring because of all this? Do you only do like one concert at the time or?
A little bit. I was asked about how many gigs I wanted to do in a row for some time ago. And I think I was just like, let's see if I can do it. No.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
I think three for me is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three on a row. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because I can see the end.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already dead tired on Thursday, you know, leaving from Finland early and then playing the but then I say, in 2 days it's over.
Yeah.
And
so you
doesn't
can
matter.
Oversee it. Yeah.
I can oversee it and the train traveling in Germany it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and also during this time because it's spring and in the summertime it's just like crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
But somehow we are addicted to live performing, aren't we?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Because during COVID, it was so boring.
It was a hell. Yeah. No, I think actually the first couple of months was actually Lars and I have talked about when are we going to have these months off
that
we really want to, you know,
And
we agreed on probably never.
And
then COVID came and we got a break and Lars was baking all the time. He baked three different cakes.
Okay.
And he was just like fika all the time, which is a Swedish word for coffee and cakes.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So that was, and we had these long walks and stuff. So, but suddenly, you know, probably from one day to another, it changed for me.
Yeah.
Then I just like,
yeah.
How long time does this continue?
That's right.
Yeah.
The addiction is there.
And yeah,
we both started young, so we have yeah. been on stage.
Yeah. And we don't know anything else.
That's right. Yeah. And I see people whose traveling conditions are ideal, people like Sting or Rolling Stones, you know, who don't have to worry about the train being late,
yeah.
they just continue.
Yeah.
They just
yeah.
continue. There's yeah. no retirement. They just go on
yeah.
up till the end.
But it has another element as well, which I suspect it doesn't go for Keith Richards, I guess, but I know and see that Sting is working out very hard. You know?
Yes, yeah.
So I think that's an issue as well, because
yeah.
you have to be very strong.
That's right.
Physically.
Yeah.
And if you come up in our age, with all respect, I feel that you know, working out and train muscles is much more important than actually practicing scales.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
all
yeah.
the time. Both
yeah,
is
that's right.
the best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, to keep up with the physics, I think that's...
Yeah,
and it goes for a singer, especially.
Especially, yeah. yeah, yeah. And I think we have seen a healthier Keith Richards lately.
Yes.
Yeah, I
yeah.
think he said he quit smoking now when he's 80.
That's dangerous.
Dangerous. Yeah.
yeah.
No. Yeah. No sudden changes at your age.
No.
Okay.
No.
Has the life? Has the world become a better or worse place during your lifetime?
That's a very good question, because I know certain ages has its own panics, and sometimes when you look back on it, it wasn't that dangerous. I mean, like the 80s was in the Cold War, it was
yeah.
very dangerous.
Yes.
Extremely dangerous.
Yes.
But you tend to, well, we didn't drop any A-bombs
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it wasn't that dangerous. But so it's very hard to answer, because we don't know where things are going.
That's right.
But I think we have, the greatest challenge we have is, of course, the climate change, you know, which
yeah.
infects all of us. And I think war is not dangerous, more dangerous, but it's silly.
It is.
Really yeah. silly.
Yeah.
I mean, what we know now,
yeah.
you know, and probably we know also a lot more about, it seems like the Earth as a planet with all that comes with it,
yeah.
you know, the life,
yeah.
is a very rare thing, because now we have the technology to look
that's right
million of
further.
Light years
yeah, yeah.
out, you know,
yeah.
and we haven't found anything yet, you know, like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's probably kind of rare.
They will find us.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah,
yeah. And they will come in peace.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We like think.
Just, yeah,
yeah,
checking out things. Yeah.
yeah.
Not like in the movies. Yeah, I know it's a complicated question, and it's hard to know. And even during the Cold War, like you said, that, I mean, at that time it looked that it is really dangerous,
yeah.
but it was also driven by the media all the time. Now,
yeah.
you know, not Gorbachev, but Brezhnev will probably attack Denmark or something,
yeah.
you know, stuff like that. But okay. What really pisses you off?
I must say, there's certain musicians... There's certain, I mean, most piano players, when they play during sound check, you know, Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You know, this podcast really will change the behavior of jazz pianists during the soundcheck. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. Because this is now the second time.
Yeah, I know. I know that from yours. Yeah. Okay. From his. Yeah. I think it was a very funny answer.
Yeah. So I mean, no, out of all things, that is the okay. I know it's a joke. Yeah.
It's your. Yeah. But I was thinking about it, and I think. Some of the, I should really be careful about what I'm saying, but I think when people are ghosting one another, when they're not calling back, or when they're just like, you know, not answering without a reason, I think that kind of pisses me off, or, you know, makes me wonder.
Non-communication. You
know, yeah.
Okay.
Just the thing, just closing down a communication.
Okay.
And then you're left with, how do I solve this problem?
Yeah.
If we have a, you know, a deal about calling about this or calling you back or, you know, how come people don't respond, and I'm not talking about, you know, I know I didn't respond on your email
no, but
on time, but you know,
I did
in a couple of days,
you know.
But if they're not responding at all,
that's right, know? Are you talking about the artistic directors in or
actually,
fellow
when
musicians?
I think about it now, I you know, all the way around, also. Old friends, where you just like you're cut off all of a sudden, or you're.
So when you call somebody's mobile and they can't answer that moment, but you expect them to call back.
No. Yeah. It's more you know, heavier than that. I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
One. Yeah. But I'm talking about if you have what you call it, you're making a deal with people. If you're setting up something. If you have not, let's play one day and then you don't hear. I'm not talking about this.
Yeah.
I'm talking about if you're, let's have a band.
Yeah.
We sit down. We make repertoire.
Yeah.
Maybe and we let's make a period. October is good for me. Was it? Yeah, it's good for me. Blah blah blah. And then we're gonna do la la la. And we maybe make a poster. Blah blah blah. And then you suddenly don't hear anything.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It can happen. Yeah.
Or you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And knowing how easy the communication is with all these
exactly.
things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just one example.
Okay.
Know? Yeah.
All right. What happens after you die? Easy questions.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of things happen, but I'm not included, you know? I don't think anything happens with me.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't believe.
Lights out. Okay.
Unfortunately, you know, I'm really. I have times where I have sought after another meaning, you know. And do I believe in rebirth? And do I believe that God is there? And but I think you're gonna be swallowed up by the now, by the being. I've had some hints in my life where I have prayed to God about a solution, and a few times I can say, like, maybe 3 or 4 times in my life, where I was really on the edge, I've got a clear answer. Really a clear answer.
Yeah.
Which I almost couldn't believe, you know.
Yeah.
But really a clear answer. But still in the everyday life, I have, I believe there's something. I believe in the power. I believe in love. I believe in the being in the now, the experience of now, and in focusing on positive things. simple things, which is positive. You know, you have a tendency to always, you know, think about how do I come to feeling good.
You know,
being making yourself a good food instead of just like taste the apple now. You know, but I don't have a religion where I tend to say that's right. This book I'm leaning on 90%. I don't have that.
Yeah. It would be easier to have that.
Definitely.
Just like a clear answer. Yeah. But you and me, we just keep wondering about things.
Yeah. And grabbing things. We have a very, very good priest in our local church, which is amazing. He's really amazing.
Yeah.
And he's not only Christian. He's also Buddhist. And he's a philosopher. And he's a freak. And he has ADHD, you know, what do you call it?
ADHD.
And he's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And he's trying to, yesterday we went to a preach, with it, and he's trying to explain the most weird and acid-like things, you know, like he said, I've said to him, don't ever take acid.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that, because then you're through the roof, you know. But he's really trying to explain people.
Yeah.
As a, he's Christianity's free jazz.
Okay, okay.
Trying to explain people, you know, very, very complicated things.
Yeah.
But if you follow him and you try to open and really understand what he's saying some fantastic things, you know. And he's saying, because he said, people often ask me as a priest, how do I find God? Where do I find God? What do I do? That's a huge question, which you must be prepared for when you're preaching.
Yeah.
And he said, I find it in people's eyes. I find it that's as close as you can get to an answer on that question.
Yeah.
You find it in people's eyes. You find it in the connection with people.
Yeah.
And the now and the small things that you do.
Yeah.
I think that's really beautiful. And that is some kind of answer.
That is, both sides now.
Now
we're on this side, and then you know there's the other side.
Yeah.
Listen, both sides now, sang by Cecilia. It's beautiful. Can be found on Spotify. You maybe recorded it twice already, or one at least
twice.
Once. Twice,
twice.
Yeah, duo and with your band.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Thank you. Mycket tack. How do you say?
Mange tack.
Mange tack.
Mange tack.
For this chat. It was lovely and very very deep and informative and
I was honored that you asked me to be in this podcast.
I was honored to have this chat with you, and go to your website is yourname.com to see your concerts and what's coming up.
Yes. Definitely. Or
that's
Instagram.
It. Instagram.
Use Instagram
that's right.
A lot.
A lot. Yeah.
And it's CAE. This.
There must have been a time in your teenage years when you told your parents that. Why did you pick up this?
I did.
I did. Yeah. Also me. Also me. Yeah. Because my name is not good internationally.
No.
How they should have known.
Yeah.
They should have known.
Course.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Thanks.